Welcome to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir.
If you've got pets, he's got answers.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Steve can help. We're positive.
Oh, God, this thing is going downhill fast.
You've got America's pet expert here on Steve Dale's Pet World.
Well, in the studio, a frequent guest on the show, one of my favorite people. We are lucky to have her in Cook County, our veterinarian, Dr. Donna Alexander. You have a long, long, fancy title.
Oh, no, I'm just the administrator for Cook County Animal and Rabies Control.
That's long. I think that's very fancy. And we're going to talk about public health today in a couple of different ways. And when it comes down to it, I think that's sort of your job description is all about public health.
Absolutely. As veterinarians, it has always been a part of our job to protect the public health as well as the health of pet animals. And that is particularly my job at Cook County, is we protect the Cook County public health and pet community health.
And there's a lot going on right now. And you and I were on a telephone call about the dog flu. It might be described, and I've seen this in some of the media reports, the dog flu is back. Yes, but it's not quite the right way to put it because it really never left.
It never truly left. The thing is that we will see it in cyclical times during seasonal times of the year. And right after the Christmas season, because animals are usually housed for other people to go to different places and they board their animals. And when you've got a close concentration of animals is when you start seeing CIV raise its ugly head again.
CIV is the canine influenza virus. And I would imagine now would be one of those times, which means in a few weeks, because people are going away. For holidays now, they're taking vacation into the summer, even more so, and then X number of weeks after that is when you see the result of the flu popping up.
Absolutely, because remember that these dogs can shed the virus for 28 to 31 days after they have stopped showing signs and symptoms. So they can be spreading the virus for a long period of time. And animals that have not been vaccinated against the virus become extremely susceptible. And remember that you're going to get a lot of young pups being born in April, May, June. So they're going to be the most susceptible to it.
One of the reasons why we're talking about it is the Anti-Cruelty Society, just down the street from here, had to say no more dog adoptions because they had so many cases of what we're talking about, which is the dog flu. So they stopped adoptions. Animal Care and Control has had a persistent lingering problem over the course of the past few months. So if the animal shelters are seeing it, it comes from somewhere. To me, it means it's out in the community.
It definitely is out in the community. The good thing about it is the more that we educate people through programs such as yours, we can tell people to make sure that their animals are vaccinated. And for the animals that are not vaccinated, please don't take them into dog-friendly areas because all they are doing is potentially subjecting other animals to the virus.
Might your dog have the flu and not? You might not even know it.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about that because I think that's. I think the number was about 20% of the dogs that have the virus don't have signs or symptoms.
They're asymptomatic. Mm-hmm. An asymptomatic dog is the most dangerous because the owner doesn't even know.
So there's no way to know.
There is no way to know. However, what we do tell people is if your dog should start coughing, and it's a little bit more than just, I drank a little bit of water the wrong way.
Right.
If it's a little bit more than that, get it to the veterinarian on the first day. The veterinarian can take some swabs and let you know whether you're dealing with the canine influenza virus and which type of canine influenza virus, because there are two types now.
Yes. And now have we seen, so let's talk about that a little bit and try not to get too technical, but something called H3N8. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-bum. Was here in Chicago in 2008?
2007, okay. 2008, okay. Yes.
And that, is it still occurring here?
Yes, it is. It's endemic in this area.
Ah, okay.
So, but now what happens last year, is that we got H3N2,
yes,
which is an Asian strain, which we had not seen until 2015.
America did not see it. Do we know how the strain of flu from dog flu, no less, from Asia occurs in this country? So if you remember just about, in fact, you were on the show. It's all your fault. You were sitting.
Don't say that.
You were sitting right where, really, this program is the first program that talked about this. Because I was beginning to get text. And by the way, I am now. You can text me 312-981-7200. You can call me at that same number. I'll catch up with the text in a moment. We were getting text as you and I were talking about something else. You were here, I think, to talk about low-cost rabies vaccines. And we were both getting these messages, and I had been hearing about this strange doggy cough thing that was happening. And I was thinking, well, this is more than your typical Bordetella. It sounds like the dog flu. No one really knew yet. And that was Sunday. By Monday, the next day, people were beginning to report the dog flu. And I was kind of predicting carefully because, you know, how do I know, you know? But based on the symptoms, it really did seem like dog flu. So we were the first to really break the story, and you were right here.
And I think that that's why they consider Chicago to be the epicenter. But if you looked at the way that H3N2 spread throughout the nation, it was not Chicago that was probably the epicenter. It's just that we were the ones that were most focused on trying to find the causal agent.
A big city, lots of media, and lots of dogs were affected. So this is a big deal. And one of the texts I have, I'll read it to you. It says, ask Dr. Alexander, it's only the flu. Why is this a big deal?
Well, it's a big deal because H3N2 has proven to be more morbid, meaning that you are sicker longer, and more mortality, meaning that there were deaths associated. In 2015, we had over 11 deaths in the area. In 2016, luckily for us, there were no mortalities associated with it.
But there were elsewhere in the country.
Elsewhere in the country. The thing is that they had to very quickly rush the vaccine for H3N2 because it had never appeared before in the United States.
Well, to me, it's a testament to veterinary medicine as to several things. First of all, something was going on, figuring out what it was, and that it wasn't the dog flu we had previously seen called H3N8, that this was different. They didn't identify it yet as to what it was. So figuring out exactly how did they figure out the strain of flu from Asia? They did. And then to come up with a vaccine as quickly as they did, to me, that's pretty incredible.
And it's also a testament to your program and programs like this, because you got the word out to people that this is a little bit different. We are seeing
something. Well, you were a part of that, too.
Thank you.
Huge part of it. Huge part of it. Because with you, we were actually able to warn the parks and say, this is one place where you shouldn't congregate. You know, there was no vaccine at the time. You know, so just be careful about being with other dogs. And if you live in an urban area like Chicago, I was going to say a challenge, but I think nearly impossible.
Well, it is a challenge, but not impossible.
Well, unless your dog's in the house all the time.
Not true, not true. And even if you noticed on my block with my dog and other dogs, that what we did is we kept them on the leash, and when we'd see each other passing, we just keep our distance and walk past each other. No nose-to-nose contact, please.
I know, but then people thought I was so rude. That actually did happen. Someone emailed someone else, and then it was forwarded to me, because that's how it works, right? That Steve Dale's really a rude guy, because there was no vaccine yet. So I was doing exactly that. And I saw these dogs coming, and I crossed the street really fast. And it's not that I didn't like the dog owner. I didn't even know this person. But I remembered it happening because she gave me a nasty look. And the next day, she sent someone an email who knew me and said, boy, is he rude. He crossed the street. But now there is prevention, and that is?
That is the key. Prevention has probably kept our morbidity down as low as it has been. And I'm sorry to hear and sorry to say that we still have had over 125 cases already in 2017 that we know of.
Now that's important because I suspect lots of dogs that were coughing, some of them may not have even seen the veterinarian, because I want to talk about the flu itself and the symptoms in a moment, because sometimes the dogs do get better fast. It doesn't include that 20% that we don't know that they're sick, obviously. So add 20% to that automatically. And in addition to that, it doesn't include those who didn't test, because I assume anyway that you're talking about the official numbers.
The official numbers are based on the acuteness of taking the test. The virologist, especially at Cornell, who did the serotyping for this particular virus, who distinguished that it was a new type of virus in the United States, tell us that the best time to test is in the first 2 days.
Ah, so if they test after that,
it may come out negative.
Yeah, interesting. It is 6:47 now on WGN, 312-981-7200. Lots of text to get to, and I will... Whoops, I think we're back. There's nothing like Dr. and Alexander and I talking about exciting topics like the flu off the air. What are they talking about? They're talking more about the flu. So we're talking about the different strains of flu that are out there. And in New York City, it was crazy because all these cats, you heard about this, I assume.
Yes.
So all these cats came down with a bird flu, but... Well, I mean, what's going on? It's 65 degrees today. It's going to be, you know. So our world is being turned upside down. The cat's getting a bird flu?
Of course.
Of course.
Of course.
Well, one of the questions that I have here is the vaccine safe? I thought we were already over-vaccinating our pets already. And I think that's a legitimate question.
I think that is a legitimate question, but it is overreactive to the safety of vaccines. Vaccines today are so safe for the pets and humans even that they have really, really done their due diligence to make sure that they are safe and protective and effective. Now, what I would say is if there is a slight anaphylactic reaction to a vaccine,
which means
that there is a slight allergic reaction to the vaccine, that is far undervalued compared to the death rate of catching the disease.
And the vaccine really, you and I were also talking about this off the air, the vaccine is really quite effective as well.
The vaccine is quite effective.
And there's one now. So we were talking about, and it gets really confusing, you know, these two strains of dog flu. So the good news is in the dog world, as far as we know today, there are only two strains in the United States. And there is a vaccine, unlike for our own flus, where there are many strains, and the experts have to guess as to what's going to be occurring in a given year. With dogs, we know there are only two strains.
So as far as we know.
I knew you'd say that. You are on the air, Monica. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
My daughter has a cat, 7 months, a kitten, 7 months old, and he bites her all the time.
Okay.
During the night, she'll cover up, you know, up to her face, and he'll come along and bite her in the cheek.
All right. You have some ideas, Dr. Alexander? I do.
Well, you can restrict the cat's movement so that it's not attacking your daughter in the bedroom. That might be the best way to do it. But then there are other things that you can give him, some diversionary toys that he could be playing with.
He's got toys. He has more toys than she had when she was a kid, and that's way too many.
Well, part of it may be that let me answer quickly just because of time here. But part of it may be that the kitten is teething, and keeping a toy in the freezer that the cat, just like you would a puppy, can actually bite on for some kittens can really be helpful. The other thing that's really important is to divert the cat, as I think you're kind of going toward, and giving the kitten an alternative behavior. So as the kitten goes to do this, then now is when to take that interactive toy, fishing pole type toy with feathers or fabric at the end, and let the kitten pounce on that. The kitten mostly just wants to expel energy, and it sounds like normal kitten behavior. But maybe the other thing is that when little kids or even adults go, ah, don't do that, and we get really dramatic, the kitten just thinks we want to play even more.
And remember, the cats are nocturnal, so they are very playful at night. And that's when you have to really, you know, discourage them from doing things to you because you want to sleep. But let the cat have some active type of things. So these interactivity of the toys is very important.
The other thing I would do is go to a antique store and look for some armor, the kind they used to wear in the middle centuries.
Instead of putting face cream on, she should put an armor on her face.
Right. Exactly. All right. Thank you. Have good luck and congratulations on the kitten.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye. Cook County veterinarian Dr. Donna Alexander is in the studio. Something else that's going on crazy around certain parts of America, including Chicago, is something called leptospirosis. We only have about a minute here, but explain it.
It's a bacterial infection that is spread in the urine of dogs, cats, and some other wild animals, especially rodents. So,
Like rats. We have
even
none of
squirrels.
Those around Chicago.
Even
we have
squirrels.
No city rats. And that's the problem, all these city rats. And yes, squirrels, possums, I believe.
Yes.
And lots of
raccoons.
Others. Yeah, raccoons are a big one. So, what do you do? I mean, this is something, by the way, is this serious? Can our dogs get very, very sick?
Your dog can catch it to the point where it causes renal failure or liver failure, meaning that your dog can die from leptospirosis. We've had over 64 cases in the Chicago area alone. And just recently in New York, a man died of leptospirosis.
A man,
because this is what we call a zoonotic, meaning that it transpires between people and animals. It can be passed.
And in fact, according to the World Health Organization, leptospirosis is the most common zoonotic illness on the planet. So not the case in America. That's good news. But in the world, I mean, this is a serious issue.
Just the same way that around the rest of the world, that rabies is a major mortal killer. But the thing is that we have vaccines here in the United States against both of these zoonotic diseases.
Are you concerned if we don't pay attention to leptospirosis, this is going to become even more? I mean, right now there's news stories about San Francisco. You mentioned New York City. Chicago's right there. I mean, we have a lot of it.
Chicago is right there. And let's think about it. It's in the urine and it can last for weeks in the urine. And what are we doing when we go to the dog-friendly areas? We clean up the poop, but we don't clean up the urine. And if you're wearing flip-flops, if you've got any kind of cracks in your feet, you're leaving yourself open for infection.
Mm. Well, that's a good way to end the show. It is. Dr. Alexander, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
We're going to go on Facebook and talk about this more, actually. So check out the WGN Radio Facebook page.